Hey, today we're going to talk about long-term relationships. Can you really make them work? And we're going to talk about 15 early relationship red flags. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Advice for Lovers podcast. This is the show where we talk about relationship issues, questions, and topics. And I'm Drew. I'm your co-host, and I'm a relationship counselor. And we have
Jenny McDaniel, relationship coach.
So today we're going to talk about long distance relationships. Do they really work? Have some kind of judgment about it. But today we're going to examine one reader's experience. So Jenny, take it away.
All right. Our listener who wrote in says, "Dear Advice for Lovers, I'm in a long distance relationship. We met online. He's in the east of the US and I'm in the west. It's been about a year, and I'm wondering how much longer before I should bring up the topic of moving toward each other. Signed, long distance Lucy." All right. So what do you think, Drew? You want to start us off with that?
East, west. Oh, those sound like opposites. Is that a sign? So let's see. They've been together a year. I don't know if they've seen each other. Let's assume that they have met at least. And they met on the internet. So I'm thinking maybe they don't know each other really very well. I mean, how much can you really know a person through, you know, talking over the internet for a year? And maybe you've seen each other in the flesh once or twice. If that, I think the odds are against this. The odds are against it. And especially if he's not even bringing up the subject, you know, she's wondering, she wants to bring it up, but she hasn't. So maybe she's got some concern over what his response will be, but he hasn't even mentioned it either. So I'm thinking the cards are the odds may be against them. It doesn't mean that they can't make it work, but that's how I see it. How do you see it?
Well, I think that before much time is spent, the topic should be brought up. You don't want to wait 3 years and have the person be like, "Oh, I just like having a pen pal," you know, like ask what's going on, be clear. You don't have to demand answers, but have them, you know, give them a bit of time to mull it over that you're interested in knowing where this is going, because a lot of people aren't emotionally available for relationships, and they will often find themselves holding distance between them and the potential partner, feeling safer because there's an emotional distance. You don't want to get wrapped up with someone who's going through that. Again, they'll keep you at a distance for a while. So up front, I think a year is a wonderful amount of time under experiencing each other and imagining that you guys have seen each other several times, hopefully spent some time in person, maybe some length of time. But I think that now would be the time to ask, "Hey, what are your thoughts? Do you have any ideas of if there's going to be change in your life? Consider if that you'd be interested in change in yours." Because what I've noticed is with the internet and the way that we can connect to people all across the country, if you're a pretty eccentric person like I am, the sky's the limit. I mean, it's a big, huge ocean of looking for people that are your style. So if you find someone and you feel like there's a good connection, A, see how they feel about it. And if they're amicable and interested in it, move forward. People work online all the time. People like a different change of scenery every once in a while. Now, some things restrict you and you can't move. You got sick parents or kids in school. Then you have to be looking for a partner who would be open to moving. So there are possibilities in couples working it out long distance, but it takes a lot of conversation. And it sounds like a year in, if you guys still dig each other and are spending time and want to spend time, would be the time to talk about it. But just don't have attachments to his answers. If he says, "I'm not willing to move," well, you have to be okay with that. You chose to date someone out of state.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
And in that sense, I guess online, offline, have some real basic common denominators, like, you know, compromise. You know, if you're long distance, somebody's going to do some compromise because you're changing your entire geography and you're kind of putting a distance between the life you already have established, friends, work, family. And And you have to have, you know, you got to be secure. These people seem to be really secure to have a partner you see every several months. Like, but it makes me wonder, like, who's really, like, I wouldn't look for something like that. I wouldn't look for a relationship that just already has built-in challenges. Like, I, hey, you live 30 minutes away, cool, an hour, 7 hours in an airplane. It's not my cup of tea. So, yeah, maybe distance is some way that people, I don't know. I don't know. I would give it a difficulty level of 7. Maybe this will work 10 on a 1 to 10 scale. This is a 7 in difficulty. But hey, if you have the right spirit and the right energy and the right vibe, and the internet today is like super kind of, you can develop a really good relationship with someone on the internet these days. Like some of my coolest friends are on the internet. And that's for
COVID.
Real.
COVID helped that. We kind of had to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my love language is touch, and I haven't found technology that allows me to do that from a distance. So Lucy, like Jenny said, put it out there and don't be attached to this answer. If it's no, then you know what to do. If it's yes, then you know what to do. So, but if you hold back for 3 years, you know, wouldn't you start getting resentful or get some kind of negative feelings? You know, like, I've been waiting 3 years for this guy to say something. It's like, oh, why would you even do that? So Lucy, long distance Lucy, good luck with that. I hope this was helpful for you. And now for this segment, we're going to talk about the there's an article on the internet called 15 early relationship red flags. So we're going to go down the list and we're going to, you know, take a look at these and see if we even agree with them or what do we think about this. So what's a red flag? A red flag is a suggestion or a warning sign of potentially dangerous behavior from someone. And by dangerous, we don't, you know, it's not like always danger, like they're going to hurt you, but it's just like dangerous because it's a waste of your time. So that's what they say here. Do you have anything to add to that definition, Jenny?
Just a warning sign of potential issues in the future. If someone lives at home with their mother, that's a red flag that he might have unhealthy connections to his mother emotionally, which could cause problems in your relationship.
Yeah.
That would be a big red flag, really. But there are smaller red flags, which is how you talk to a server when you're out to dinner. Does he boss him around like as if he's the master? Well, that energy is likely going to come back to you at some point, or someone you love. Red flags are like that too. Suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think some of these are really interesting. So let's jump right into it. Number one is love bombing. And that's when someone frequently attempts to influence you with over the top displays of attention and affection. So excessive compliments, spending too much time together too soon, text, email, and calling many times a day. They want you to spend more time with them than your friends and things like that. So what do you think? Love bombing. Is that a red flag?
Well, it sounds like codependency would be a better word for love bombing. So I think it's okay to show a lot of affection and to show gratitude and express your love and what have you. I think that's a healthy thing to do. I think society thinks it's a little weird, but I think it's a healthy thing to do. So what I would look at if someone's love bombing is if they're likely having some codependent insecurity issues. And if you think that their intelligence, their emotional intelligence is big or high enough to chisel at that, that could be a pink flag. Because a lot of people have insecurities and codependencies, and to just write it off as the big red flag, you can, depending on what you're willing to work with. But quite often people on some level do have these insecurities. That just looks like a hyped up version of display of insecurity. What do you think?
Yeah. I like pink flag. That's a phrase that I like. I'm going to use it. I think, it starts out, I mean, it's good. Hey, they're giving me all this attention. They're buying me stuff. They really love me. They want to talk to me all the time. Woohoo. But too much, you know, you got to know what's too much. Like, we just met yesterday and this guy just bought me a ring, and, you know, a car. It's like, you know, you got to pay attention.
Flag. Yeah.
That's too much too soon. It's too. So it's 2-something. So that's a, you know, you'll find out later what that's all about, but be careful. They don't respect your boundaries is number two. Number two is, you know, they're bending, they're pressuring you to kind of get out of your comfort zone, either sexually, you know, hey, let's wait a while. Hey, what about tonight? It's been 10 minutes. And it doesn't even have to be sexual, invading your personal space, asking too many personal questions, not even respecting your time, not respecting boundaries. You got to check for it. It might start out really small in the beginning, but if it starts small in the beginning, possibility it'll grow like a weed. What do you think?
Boundaries is everything, are everything, in my opinion, in relationships, meaning friendships, partnerships, family relationships, business relationships, intimate relationships. If the person doesn't want to respect your boundaries, then absolute red flag. Now, what people feel when people feel like their boundaries are breached, every person has a different feeling around that. So what one's boundary is being breached is not another's boundaries being breached. So we have to just take it subjectively and as it comes and what have you. But yeah, definitely boundaries around sex. Now, sometimes you have to create boundaries together. So if they ask you out on the wrong day and you said they broke my boundaries, that's being a little ridiculous. You know, I don't go out on Saturdays. Can you remember that? Try to remember that, you know, or whatever. Kind of help them find your boundaries. So I do think that there's a time and a place to run if a boundary is being broken, like sexually or physically of any way, emotionally. But sometimes the boundaries just need to be created. So again,
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially the part where you need to know what a boundary is, and you need to be sensitive to, you know, what's pushing a boundary, and, you know, and let's create boundaries together. Let's be compromising a little bit. You know, if you're super rigid and they're trying to get you to flex, maybe they're not disrespecting your boundary. Maybe they're just trying to get you to kind of be a little bit more considerate. I don't know. But, you know, situational, it's the situation, but you need to educate yourself on what it looks like. So you'll know when you're not getting it. Respect is a lot. It's very important. So they check in frequently. Do you think that that's a red flag?
I think it's a red flag for someone who doesn't like to be checked in on frequently. Now, what is frequently? Is that like every 5 minutes? Because that's obsessive, but frequently, like couple times a day. Hey, how are you? If a person is being offended that they're being checked in on twice a day, maybe they just have to look for a partner that's a little more independent and doesn't want to connect quite like that. So what do you think?
Yeah. Some of these examples are saying, like, you go out, oh, you're out with your friend, and then I text you a couple times, you know, like, it's not just I'm checking in with you, but I'm checking to see what you're up to. Hey, okay. It's I made it to work, honey. What are you doing? Hey, I'm on lunch break, honey. What are you doing? Hey, I'm in traffic on the way home, honey. What are you doing? It's like, you know, checking in with the person to see what they're doing. What do you think?
Well, again, we're kind of coming up against some insecurities, some codependencies. This person that's checking in, needing to be checked into all the time or checking in all the time, is expressing insecurities and uncertainties. It's coming out in their physical actions and their behaviors. Likely they have a lot of anxiety. And again, these can be red flags to the right or wrong person, however you want to think about it. But these are things that also can be looked at and healed. Like, as opposed to why isn't this person checking in with me enough? Look at maybe why you were needing to be checked into so much or whatever.
Yeah. Got to think about that. I mean, if you don't want someone that's anxious or that has anxiety or insecurity and you just met them, like, unless you're looking for a fixer upper, you know, got to ask yourself the question, you know, is this what I really want? And tell yourself the truth. No matter how good they look. So they want, number four, they want you to, they always want you to prioritize them. So I want to hang out with your friends. What about me? I thought we were going to, you have hobbies and things like that, but they want you to kind of put that all second to them. Things like that. What do you think?
Always not good. If someone suggests that they're looking for a relationship where they're often prioritized, they're voicing a desire, something they're looking for, but all the time, no, that's kind of really, again, looking at some control issues, which usually boil down to fear and anxiety and insecurities and what have you. So no, I think that's a red flag. Always wanting to hang out. Yeah, no.
I'm the king of everything. I come number one. I mean, you, in a way, you kind of, it's kind of a, how you look at it. You know, you want your partner to feel important, sure. But they, you know, can they really always be number one above everything else? Like, you really literally had a life before you met this person. So I don't know. They want to jump in and be the emperor. They might need to get some new clothes. So did you catch that? Emperor's new clothes. So number five, they're jealous. And this this literally says jealousy is a combination of anxiety, insecurity, anger, and fear. And you've been talking about that throughout. So I guess we can count that as a red flag.
Yeah, it's a red flag. Again, showing insecurity and some control issues. Does this mean a person is a god-awful person because they experience jealousy? No. Might be quite the opposite. They're just going through an emotion that's heavy on them and experiencing insecurity through jealousy.
Yeah. It's not an opportunity or justification to be judgmental, because people don't ask for this. You don't go stand in the line at the grocery store and say, give me a large anxiety and insecurity.
Hell no.
you get that. And it's probably not a happy, pleasant space for them to be in. So, you know, if anything, let's give them some compassion, because, you know, and let's wish them well as they go out and try to find some healing, but not on my dime, not on my time. I just met you. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a lover, not a project. You know, this is not a flip your house type of deal, but that's just me. They make fun of you. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, oh, but it's really funny. It's like, I didn't mean it that way. It's like, oh, you chicken head, rooster foot, something. They make fun of something about you or you, and then they say, hey, it's just a joke, and it was pretty funny. What do you think about that? And we just met.
Yeah, I think that in order for someone to utilize comedy properly and empathetically, you don't do it when someone first meets you. It's usually like, hey, let's connect. This is me. And then you might notice that I tease and joke a little. And I think someone needs to be really responsible with sarcasm and jokey energy, because it can be taken wrong by a person who doesn't know you. And that person can be using that to just cover really bad, you know, insults, actual insults.
Yes.
So it feels different. So even they're insulty, it feels different than, you know, you come in with a funny new hairdo and you know it's funny and your friend's calling you a damn rooster or something. You'll laugh with them. Right, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody you don't know, well, you chicken head rooster, I don't know you.
Right.
You know, like, don't talk to me like that, because you don't really know me and I don't know that you're kidding, and it doesn't even sound like you're kidding. So save the insults.
Mm-hmm. You have to have some awareness. I mean, if that's your one trick, I mean, that's your one trick pony and that's what you do, then that you're not going to fit well with everybody, because everybody doesn't want to be the topic of your jokes, especially if they can be insulting. But if you're responsible with it, then you pay attention. You know your partner, you take the time to get to know your partner. Your partner may not be that type of person that wants to be the punchline of your jokes. So, but coming up, you know, starting out like that, hey, that might tell me that that's the type of person you are. And I don't even really appreciate that. And if you're starting here, where is this going to go in a year or two? Are you going to be, you know, giving me a hot foot? You're going to throw a firecracker in the bed while I'm sleeping? Oh, that was funny. Okay. So on to the next. Let's get out of the fun and let's get into serious. I just said that. All of their exes are crazy. Number seven. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that person's not likely being very reflective of themselves and their issue that came into play in a relationship, because in a relationship, it's never just one person. It's going to always be both. And maybe one person struggles a little more than the other or what have you, but both people need to be reflective and willing to shift and change and compromise. So if all his exes are crazy, I'm just going to bet that, you know, he got in with them hot and heavy and passionate and got them hooked. And then the second, you know, they're needing, you know, some functionality in a relationship, i.e. maybe or some responsibility again, maybe moving in together or something like this, they dart because that's not fun. That takes a lot of effort and what have you.
Yeah. I mean, it takes two to tango. And I like what they said. I think it sums it up well. It says, if they have nothing good to say about their exes, they'll probably have nothing good to say about you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that person's not being reflective and they're not being, they're not owning anything.
Exactly. Their partner was probably asking for certain things that they wanted in the relationship and they were unwilling to give it. And the girl started acting a little crazy because, you know, how many times you have to tell someone something and you have emotions. Oh, that bitch is crazy. Well, really, it's just you're not engaging in an emotional relationship and it's making it seem like you wanted to, but not following through. And this can make anyone kind of crazy, man, woman, whatever. Yeah. So, not taking responsibility.
And they weren't even crazy at all. Maybe you're just super, like, it's more comfortable for you to dismiss them and not take a look at yourself. Yep. So, yeah.
It's likely how it is half the time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My exes were crazy till I learned a little more about myself. Then I realized they were probably really smart to move on. But hey, we learn from stuff like that if we allow ourselves to. So number 9, your friends don't like them. So you met a guy and I guess he's met your friends and it's been, you know, a very short amount of time and none of your friends likes this person. Is that a red flag to you?
I don't know, because a lot of my friends have emotional hiccups with relationships, as do most old soul females and old souls in general. So I would think that they might be being a little too subjective than objective, depending on the person. Now, if it's one that I take, if it's a friend that I really feel like is very clear and sensing and not judgy, and she says, hey, there's something up with this guy, I'll listen. But if it's my friend that has emotional trauma around relationships, I probably wouldn't take it so seriously. But like, if all my friends didn't like a person, that's a red flag.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, some people just for whatever reason are haters. Yeah. But sometimes your friends see the things that you don't.
Sure. Especially at first there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you might be seeing, oh, this nice car, he's good looking, he works out, he's got a great job, and you miss some of the really important things, and your friends don't. So you kind of got to weigh that one out. Number 10, they aren't very motivated. And it says motivation doesn't necessarily mean career advancement or productivity. Although the inability to maintain a job is a major red flag, are they motivated to learn and try new things, to find new and fun date ideas, or stuff like that? Do you find that to be a red flag? Is that?
You know, it just depends on what they're seeking. When I lived in Boulder, you'd find guys that were on internet dating websites who, when talking to them, you find out very quickly that they are over-motivated. They have 2 hours a week for a girlfriend. That's what they have to spare. So some women don't want a man that's wildly over-motivated. Now, not motivated at all, well, that's kind of a red flag too. So you just have to go with what you're looking for. A lot of women want a husband who's very successful and they will encourage that and assist that, and they want a motivated man. Some women are happy to have their husband be a farmer at home and be motivated on the farm, but not be out motivating in the world, so to speak. Right. So it just depends on what you're looking for. You really just have to ask yourself. And these are questions you ask yourself while you're dating, you know, while you're kind of learning. This is a process of learning. And sometimes it takes us a while to find the right one. So what do I like? Do I like the lawyer who's always at work and the doctor? Because I like to be a doctor's wife or girlfriend. Or do I like the man who makes good money but works part-time because he likes to chill in the evenings and smell the roses. I don't know.
Yeah.
So just what are you looking for? It just depends.
Exactly. Exactly. I'd say that's a pinky. That's a pink flag because it could be and it could not be.
Depending which on it, you.
Yeah. Number 11. They never initiate conversations, intimacy, dates. That is, to me, that's a person that's just so wrapped up. They're like a mummy. It's like you have things you want to say. There's times when you want to be intimate, and there's times and places you want to go on dates, but you just don't speak on it. So maybe there's some kind of fear of rejection or some insecurity or some need to please you. So they don't even want to, of course, there's fear again. They don't want to say anything unless it's like agreeing with you. So you say everything first. Personally, that's a super red flag for me. I totally don't like that. I like someone that's going to talk as much as I do and or somewhat, you know, sometimes have an original thought, you know. What do you think?
I think most people want to connect like that and want their partner to initiate and as well as they initiate, and it's more of a back and forth kind of thing. But I know a lot of type A females who would be happy to have a man let her initiate everything or flip it around. A man who's likes to, maybe he's not an egomaniac, but he likes to be in charge and he feels like he's good at it. And if the woman feels like that and doesn't want to initiate, maybe that's a good connection. But no, I think you're on to something. Someone who never wants to initiate something has some other stuff going on, some deep insecurities, some traumas, what have you. So never wanting to initiate something, yeah, that's an emotional, psychological thing. Doesn't mind not initiating things, and you get a type A person who likes to initiate things, that's a good match. So never initiating, a problem. Not caring whether that you initiate often or not, not a problem, depending on the part of their partner. Now, if you want a partner that engages all the time and wants you to initiate as much as you do, then yeah, that's not a good partner for you. But there's a lot of people out there who would appreciate the flexibility. I don't really care much. You pick. I'm cool. If I have something to say, I'll voice it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like on a spectrum. So
yeah,
too much this way, too much that way.
Sure.
And, you know, based on personal preferences, I don't like to be the guy in charge all the time, because when you initiate, you're making yourself vulnerable to someone saying, not right now. Or no, I don't want to do that. But that's part of life, you know. To me, it's part of life. You know, we can't live in fear of not always being right or never doing something that's, oh, that didn't work out very well. So, I mean, don't put all that on me. Let's do it.
When you ask someone, and it does, it takes a level of courage to initiate, like you said so beautifully, because they could very easily say no. But a remedy to that, or the antidote to that, is not having an attachment to what they say. Hey, yes. Do you want to go to the park? No, I'm doing this. Okay, next time. Not, he doesn't love me anymore, which is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's perfect. Perfect. Nothing else to say about that one. You nailed that one. Number 12, they're hot and cold. It says, okay, first be on the lookout for benching and breadcrumbing. Benching is when someone you've been dating stops agreeing to meet you in person but continues to contact you over message and social media. That's benching. Breadcrumbing is leading someone on with no intention of ever meeting in person or building a real relationship. Are they wishy-washy with their affections? Do they draw away from you for long periods of time and seem to want you to go after them? Red flag. So that's what they mean by hot and cold. I would have took that a totally different way.
Me too, but kind of the same way. I like the description of the breadcrumbing and benching. That's interesting. I'll store that in my vocabulary. This person is not emotionally available. And again, that's something that is up to them if they want to look at this lifetime. They probably aren't even willing to admit that they're not emotionally available because they're saying they're going on dating websites and that's good enough to make them available, when really it's a lot more than that. It's the follow through. So yeah, red flag.
Yeah, that's something like, so breadcrumbing, I'm not even touching that because it's something new and I really just have to chew on that a little bit.
Sure.
But what I thought hot and cold meant was, you know, like, hey, you're beautiful. I love you. Let's get together. Blah, blah, blah. Then something does go their way and it's like, forget you. Mm-hmm. Forget about it then. I'm never going to try anymore. Just like those extreme emotions, like instead of being disappointed that you didn't get your way, it's like you get really like cold and like, I'm never going to try again. Just, you know, that extreme. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of something like that?
That's a red flag too. I mean, it's someone who can't see any gray when most of the world is gray, or experiences in the world, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they call that overreacting a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Number 13, we're running through this one. In perfect timing too. Number 13, excessive alcohol usage.
Yeah, I have a high tolerance for the things that I like to do. So let's talk about excessive first.
Yeah.
Let's clear that up, because some people might say one drink a week is excessive because they shouldn't drink every week. So what do you think excessive means? Is this like binge drinking a couple times a week, or drinking every night, or?
I mean, if you consider it excessive, then it's your call to make. But what I would generically think is that, like, hey, first date, and you gotta damn near roll me out in a wheelbarrow,
right,
or stop me from fighting. Yeah.
Problem. Mm-hmm.
And then they say, which this makes a little bit of sense, keep an early eye out if every date involves alcohol. Try to hang out with them sober first to see if you really like their personality.
Sure. And if they even want to do that, they might say, I'm not going for walks in the park. I'll meet you at the bar. Well, that's a red flag that they only want to drink, and it's part of their lifestyle, and they're going to have to find someone who also does that.
We could take a walk around the bar, honey. We'll walk from this table to the bar.
Okay. Or this bar to this bar.
Right. Right. Number 14, you're scared to have the relationship talk. Have you found yourself in a situation? Are you scared to define the relationship? A situationship is a romantic relationship that is and remains undefined or loosely defined. So you're in this, you're afraid to even bring it up, you know? So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm imagining if you're afraid to bring it up, they're not making it clear that they want to be with you. So you want to know. And if you're afraid to ask, the likelihood is that they're kind of neutral about it, because if they're one way or another, you would know. If they didn't want to hang out with you, they wouldn't see you anymore. And if they were wildly interested in asking you to be their girlfriend or go further or whatever, you would have known that by now. So if you're afraid that they're neutral, that's just something to look at inside of yourself. Hey, I'm having fear. This is normal. I'm a human. But I can't control how he feels and what his free will chooses. And I will just hold space with as little attachment as possible. And while this person decides what they want, and I'm going to, again, not attach to what they choose, because they're choosing for themselves. And my ego wants them to choose me, but I know that it's their ego who needs to choose.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's kind of, I want to say weird, but I don't want to say weird. So, I'm an adult. You're an adult. We've seen each other for about a month. And then I slip you a piece of paper. You want to be my girl? Yes, no, maybe. Check the box and send the paper back to me. Like, hey, like you said, if you're afraid to ask, that's something going on with you. And being, what did you say, connected to their answer, you know, rather than being connected to life and the way life just unfolds. Because that not working out could be the door opening for something even better.
Exactly. Someone who wants to say yes in a reasonable amount of time. You know, a couple months in, that it takes a while to get to know someone. This person, you know, you're waiting for them to say yes or no, and they're just really starting to get to know you a little. So everyone has a different idea of how quickly this should happen.
Yeah.
Depends on how much time you spend together and how the chemistry is. But I don't think it's weird to date someone for several months without like some sort of absolute, you know. I think it's good, especially if you only get to see each other for a few hours on the weekend. You know, most people have to work and do life and what have you. So there's not a ton of time always. So yeah, I think several months in is normal, and that you should enjoy the ride and see how you respond and be less worried about how he responds to you and see how you really feel about him. He's going to start showing himself after, you know, first few dates.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
And even if they don't say it, they show it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can tell this guy wants to be in a relationship. Sometimes you never have to even say it. It just flows into that and you know it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is called early dating red flags. And I want to mention that I didn't know what dating meant really for a really long time. Like maybe I knew the definition, but I didn't live in that definition. If I get your phone number and we talk a little bit and we go out, oh, you're not seeing other people. Not that I'm telling you, but that was the understanding. Like I'm not seeing anybody else. It's like exclusive dating. But sometimes dating means you're seeing all kinds of people because we're just dating. This isn't a relationship. So people need to really, I think people need to get clear on definitions and expectations that you place on these things, you know?
Yep. Brilliant.
And number 15 is you have a bad gut feeling. So what I want to say about that is we need to be healthy enough to listen to our gut, to have a gut that's not super filtered and biased and, you know, attached to getting the outcome that you want. Otherwise, your gut's not going to be a good guide, you know, if you don't know how to listen to it. What do you think?
Yeah, because I like to specialize in reading past lives. A gut feeling that doesn't feel good could simply mean that you're coming up on a karma, which is exactly where you should be. So like you said, you have to have a good perspective of what this gut feeling is. Is there a lot of fear and stress for no good reason? Or is the gut feeling there because this person is kind of suspicious or being a little weird? So gut feelings, you have to be careful with only because it's your intuition and it could be responding to a situation to give you a sign in that moment. But then it also could be symbolizing some cellular memory you have from either traumas in this lifetime or past. So you just gotta be careful with it. Because I mean, some women get bad feelings about every man they meet because they have trauma around men.
Yeah. So that's not a gut feeling that is really neutral.
Intuitive. And
that's some trauma.
It's more trauma based. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get a healthy gut before you start listening to it.
Take some probiotics. Do something good to your digestive system.
Right. And sometimes people are so blinded by the light. It's like, oh my God, this person is so, you know how people are so into the physical, like, oh my God, look at how she looks. And your gut is turned off. Like you're not hearing any of that. You're not hearing it because this is what you want. Mm-hmm. It's like a job. You take a job, oh, look at the pay, but you didn't look at the fact that it's going to just take all of your life from you, you know, 70 hours a week and you're stressed out and you're sitting in a chair getting unhealthy all day. It's just, there's a bigger picture. We can't be, you know, living with blinders on and having tunnel vision. Oh, we can, but maybe we need to see the bigger picture.
Yes, indeed. The bigger picture is the better picture.
Yeah. And so number 15 was you have a bad gut feeling. And then it rolls right into what good relationships are all about. And it says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think there's 10 of them. So let's see without looking, if we can come up with the 10 things that are healthy parts of a relationship. I peaked and some of them I would not have thought of, but
so I'll do it. I haven't peaked. So let's see. What's the question? Ask it specifically. Again,
it's just, it says relationships are all about : and then it has 10 bullet points. So what are 10
relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they're all about. Mm-hmm. Equality. I would say communication, excellent communication, high emotional intelligence so that people can get through issues. Chemistry. So what does it say? What are some of the things they say?
Going at a comfortable pace. So not feeling pressured. Building trust. Gotta have trust. Being honest.
Good.
And those things work with the communication. If you have healthy, good communication, you can build the trust. If you have the behaviors to back it up. Having independence from each other.
Good.
And that's kind of the opposite of the codependence, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Valuing each other's beliefs.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Feeling balanced. Like you said, equality. Good. I guess that's part of feeling balanced. Mm-hmm. Being caring and compassionate, taking responsibility. You know, hey, that's on me. I picked that. It sucked. We won't do that again. Having healthy conflict. That one is one that I learned because, I mean, I don't know. I never was in a relationship where we talked about, you know, how will we deal with conflict? I guess because, you know, being in that fantasy mindset, we'll never have a conflict. Right. But, you know, sometimes there's going to be disagreements, or I believe that they will come. And my thing was always fight fair. And my significant other said, well, what does that mean? I said, if we ever get, you know, have a conflict or whatever, let's always remember who we're talking to. We're talking to somebody that we love. And when you remember that, then it doesn't get like down and dirty and, you know, throwing people's things in their face to hurt them. You know, we're not, we can't win as individuals when we're a couple. So if I make you feel like you lost, then we lost. Cause yep. it's not a tug of war, a battle.
Yeah. I would call that in the realm of high emotional intelligence, where, like I tell my clients all the time, it's not if you're going to have problems, it's when and how you move through them. No one's perfect. We're going to flail about and fail on some of them and what have you. But for the most part, we're looking for someone who has healthy emotions so that they can present mostly a healthy personality or opinions when you're going through tough stuff, remembering, like you said so brilliantly, who you're talking to, a person you love, a person you respect. Yeah. So yeah, high EQ, I think that's the biggest ingredient I see in healthy, long-term longevity relationships. So when the shit hits the fan, they can manage it.
And living under the umbrella of, these are learning opportunities. So I don't have to run away from, I made a bad decision. You know, I don't have to hide from that because there's growth in recognizing, you know, and being presented now with a new opportunity to do even better. So
exactly.
Yeah. Understanding that all this is work is for the good, if I see it that way. And the last one, which is tops on a lot of people's list, have fun.
Chemistry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have fun together. Enjoy the experience. Put effort into enjoying experiences. Well, so.
And we're basically out of time, but I want to ask a closing question. How do people stay together for years? You know, I want to sneak off with the neighbor, but I can't. Or do people who stay together for years even have thoughts like that? Or is there, this is like this magic love where I never have a lustful thought or never, you know, how do people make it for years?
Well, I think that they reduce the shame around having affections or attractions to other people. Now, if they're in an open relationship, they can act on that. If they're in a monogamous relationship, it's monogamous and talk to your partner and probably not. So I think if you're constantly obsessing about having sex with other women, then you're probably not monogamous. And maybe that should be something you explore as opposed to hiding in a monogamous relationship. But if it's something that crosses your mind occasionally and you still, I mean, it's called testosterone for men. If men don't have that, then their penises often won't get hard. So we want them to have some virile or testosterone or energy in that space. It just has to be respectable, especially depending on what type of relationship you're in.
It's miserable to feel restricted, you know, like this is what I want to do, but I'm locked into this dead end or this relationship where I think I should be, you know, when I really want to be here. It's like YOLO, you got one life. No, right. So yeah, be free. But I think what helps me, and I'm not long-term, you know, by people's definition, I'm not 20 years in, but I see other women sometimes like, hey, she's cute, but I know who I care about. I know who I want to touch and who I want touching me. And I know the person that I'm with, and I don't even know that other person. So there's not a real comparison unless I'm going to be on some super animalistic lust stuff, which I can have at home. So it kind of keeps me from being miserable in my relationship. I just got to look at it a certain way. But am I just forcing myself to be happy? I don't know. We'll talk about that on our next episode.
We appreciate you guys.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.